against, working together, there is nothing we cannot do and no height we cannot achieve. Together we will make America powerful again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. We will make America great again. Thank you, Bronx. Thank you, New York. We love you. Thank you. God bless everybody. God bless you. God bless you.
But first, gang, as you know, it is springtime and the bees are out and about buzzing away, but they're doing a lot more than just pollinating. Now bees are saving America from the woke wave of leftist culture that's trying to wipe out all that's good and true. I kid you not, Turley Talks is teaming up with MakeHoneyGreatAgain.com to bring you something truly spectacular, MAGA Honey. You can now get a 16-ounce bottle of pure, raw, ultra-MAGA honey packaged in a bottle that looks just like our great president, Donald Trump. This untouched raw honey came straight from 11,000 hives in South Carolina. And I'm telling you, honey never tasted as good as it does coming from a Trump-inspired bottle. Trust me. So what are you waiting for, gang? Visit MakeHoneyGreatAgain.com. Use promo code TURLEY to show your support. We can make honey and America great again. Just click on that link below right now. Something really is happening in America right now. Something that was highly palpable, highly visual for all to see in the South Bronx last night. Working class men and women of all colors, of all ethnicities, of all different backgrounds, Democrats and independents, those who have been politically engaged and those who have not, are awakening. Something that was not happening in 2016 or in 2020 or in 2022, something appears to be happening now. These working class Americans, these men and women of all colors, all stripes, all ethnicities, all backgrounds, are joining together as part of a growing, surging movement from the ground up that is uniting this nation in a way that we have not seen in over 30 years. What happened yesterday was just a few short months ago absolutely unthinkable, frankly unimaginable. What we saw yesterday was the unification of rural America with urban America. The white exurban voter became one with the non-white urban voter. What we saw yesterday was the makings of a new political coalition that could indeed represent the single largest, most powerful coalition we have seen since the Reagan era. A coalition that won three landslide election blowouts in a row, back to back to back. But unlike the Reagan coalition that united together economic libertarians with military hawks, with Christian conservatives, this coalition today is not united by a common enemy. That's what held the Reagan coalition together. The Reagan coalition was held together by a unity around a common enemy, being the Soviet Union and the threat of global communism. That's what united your economic libertarians with your military hawks, with your Christian conservatives. When that threat dissipated and died with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, what happened in 92? Bill Clinton, the Reagan coalition unraveled. And what was so fascinating is it unraveled around populist sentiments. It was George Herbert Walker Bush that was the out-of-touch elitist. It was Bill Clinton that felt your pain and sang in the church choir. And if you're my voice tomorrow, I'll be your voice for the next 4 years. But it wasn't just Clinton. Ross Perot, 20% of the vote. Primarily working class vote. Concerned about NAFTA, GATT, right? That giant sucking sound of our manufacturing industry. That Reagan coalition unraveled in disparate populist shards. This new movement is bringing that populism together. This new political coalition is not rooted in a mutual enemy. This new political coalition that we saw on display yesterday in the South Bronx is united by a mutual love, a mutual desire, a mutual aspiration. MAGA. The new coalition of rural and city voters, of the exurban and the urban, is rooted in a mutual love for America. A mutual love for America's borders. A mutual love for America's industrial economy. A mutual love for America's rich diversity of culture, custom, and tradition, most particularly our Christian tradition. What we saw yesterday was the beginning of a mass political coalition that promises to truly and finally make America great again. Let's look at some highlights from yesterday. First off, the line to get into Crotona Park in the South Bronx was absolutely massive. Reports were that the average time of standing in line was 1 to 2 hours to get in. People lined up for what seemed miles for a rally that, keep in mind, was organized for just about 3,500 people to show up. They did not know what to expect in the South Bronx, in the bluest of blue districts in the entire nation. Estimates were, at the end of the day, over 30,000 people came out to see Trump. And then, of course, you had this. Stand with Trump, I stand with Trump. United we stand, divided we fall. Indict our president, you better indict us all. This gang, as you can see, where else would you see that? These are rappers, of course, filming a rap video at the rally. It's literally a rally rap. It's a rally. Can you imagine anything even remotely like that at a Biden event with his oatmeal crusted lips and his shuffling shoes? Again, organic, grassroots music and dance of the people, hyper localism. This is the Bronx celebrating someone who promises to represent them rather than rule them. When Trump took to the stage, he tore into what Biden and the Democrats have done to New York City and the nation.
But sadly, this is now a city in decline. Throughout my life, I've seen New York through good times and bad, through boom times and crime waves, through market crashes and terrorist attacks, but I've never seen it quite like this. We have filthy encampments of drugged out homeless people living in our places that we've spent so much time with children where they used to play. We have lunatics killing innocent bystanders by pushing them onto the railroad tracks for sport. It's a sad thing. Don't worry. It gets positive. Don't worry. It gets so positive. Remember, we're going to win. We're all winners. We're going to win so big. We're going to make it bigger and better than ever before. Remember that. So don't worry. By the time the other 6,000 or 7,000 people get in, it'll be very positive. Our subways are squalid and unsafe. The ceiling tiles are falling down, and they look worse than a third world country. The medians of our highways are crumbling. Our sidewalks are littered with garbage, bottles, and trash. But worst of all, the discarded needles from people that so desperately are in need of help. And we have mobs of migrants fighting our police officers and giving America the middle finger. But we are not going to let this continue. We are not going to abandon our hope and our pride. This city has given us so much, and now it is time that we are going to give it back. Together, we are going to make New York City great again, and simultaneously, we are going to make America great again.
Now, what I love about that clip is that really is a microcosm of the speech as a whole. It was darkness mixed with light. I love this little quip. I promise it's going to get more positive. Don't get too nervous here. I get this from most of these people. This is their first Trump rally they've ever been to. They're like, I'm getting depressed here. No. I'm going to mix despair with hope, right? Somberness with humor. It was a brilliant speech. One of the best he's given. He was upbeat. I thought this tweet actually summarized it very well. It was a message of hope and unity. It was a solutions-oriented speech. It connected national decay to local issues. Did you notice that? And it provided an action plan on how we were going to reverse the decay. The speech provided plenty of anecdotes of projects that Trump had worked on in building up New York City. Both America and New York City's downfall and their restoration were deeply personal for Trump, and he drove that home. It was a message of unity across the political divide, across all races and ethnicities. And again, he made that point explicitly.
We had the greatest economy in history. Everybody here, where you have a small business or if you had a job, you were getting more than you ever made. And we had no inflation. We had no 1.4%, considered none, considered better than none, because frankly, none in its own way is a bad thing also. We had a perfect number, 1.4%. It doesn't matter whether you're black or brown or white or whatever the hell color you are. It doesn't matter. We are all Americans, and we're going to pull together as Americans.
Whatever the hell you are. I don't care, whatever the hell you are. We are all Americans, and we're all going to pull together as Americans. This is so key to understanding what's happening here in this rising up of this new political coalition, this rural and urban coalition. It's something that's catching the legacy media completely off guard. They have no idea. They have no frames of reference with which to interpret this. What you're hearing there in that speech is the language of what is known as civic nationalism, okay? Civic nationalism. Scholars generally make a distinction between two kinds of nationalism. So you got civic nationalism on the one hand, and you've got ethnic or ethno-nationalism on the other. So ethnic nationalism is characterized, obviously, by a nation based on ethnic or racial unanimity, homogeny. So, for example, Japan is generally characterized by an ethnic nationalism. Japan is a nation for a particular ethnicity. But the vast majority of countries around the world are actually polyethnic. Russia, for example, has over 100 ethnicities represented in it. So most countries are actually made up of a multiplicity of ethnicities. And in those nations, like ours in particular, the nationalism that tends to pervade the discourse and the sentiments of people is what's known as civic nationalism. And in civic nationalism, you have a multi-ethnic people united around a common core, a common set of customs, cultural symbols, and traditions, usually rooted in one of the classic religions of the world. So for us, it's obviously Christianity. And that's exactly what Trump is appealing to here. We have to understand that from a civic nationalist perspective, the nation is a race. It's like a transcending race, a meta race, as it were. To be an American in this case, but you'll see the same thing, you know, to be Russian, whatever, it's the same discourse you'll find around the world. To be an American is to belong to a national race of people, a multi-ethnic race. In this sense, Trump speaks to whites, he speaks to blacks, Latinos, Asians, as all Americans, as all one people. And it's so interesting because Trump has been doing this for years. That's why I've said this is a coalition that's been in the making for years now. If you read or listen to his speeches starting from 2015 onward, when he first announced his candidacy, you'll note that the rhetoric of racial politics that dominates the political left, right, which involves things like racial discrimination, racial prejudice, racial disenfranchisement, this is all replaced by Trump with nationalist categories and concerns. So Trump still talks about discrimination. You'll notice he talks about discrimination all the time. He talks about prejudice all the time. He talks about disenfranchisement all the time. But you'll notice what makes him unique is that Trump couches those concepts in economic nationalist terms. So he talks about eliminating economic discrimination as a result of unfair globalist trade deals. Trump focuses on employment disenfranchisement in the disappearance of industrial and manufacturing jobs to a globalized division of labor. And he talks about a pay prejudice that exists in the driving down of wages due to mass unfettered illegal immigration. You see, Trump deals with race, but from a very, very different vantage point than I think anyone in the world of racial politics, and particularly the legacy media, can even remotely understand. Again, listen to how he describes illegal immigration. Keep in mind, in a largely non-white context. Check it out.
We're going to end all of that stuff. They respected your president. They respected our country. And we're not going to let people, we are not going to let these people come in and take our city away from us and take our country away from us. It's not going to happen. Now, who would let people, seriously, who would let people come from prisons and jails, from mental institutions? They cannot stay. We will immediately begin the largest criminal deportation operation in our country's history because this situation is sustainable by no country. No country can sustain this.
And then they started chanting, build the wall, build the wall, Bill, right? Now, you'll notice that back in 2016, 2020, right, whenever Trump started talking that way in rural rallies, in rural parts of America, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Michigan, Pennsylvania, whenever he started talking about these immigrants or illegal immigrants are taking our country away from us, whenever he talked that way in rallies that were predominantly white, CNN accused him incessantly of racism. This was all illegal. All this illegal immigration talk was just a bunch of racist dog whistles, right? Now he comes to the heart of the Bronx, a clearly multicultural audience. And what does he do? He says the exact same thing. And not only does he say the exact same thing, these illegal immigrants are trying to take our nation away from us, the people start going crazy and start chanting, build the wall, build the wall. White hands and black hands are both raised up in support, cheering on what he's saying. You see, the nation is a race. This is civic nationalism, not ethno-nationalism. This is what the media never got, never understood, and still doesn't understand when it comes to Trump. He is not an ethno-nationalist. He is a civic nationalist. If you're inside the country, if you are a citizen, if you're an American, Trump's policies are all about protecting you. If you're outside the country, or if you're a non-citizen, his policies are all about, frankly, frustrating you, because his policies are fundamentally America first. It's just, I'm sorry. I mean, this is just what makes so much of the legacy media's so-called analysis just so patently absurd. They don't understand this. I don't think they want to, frankly. It's so odd. Classical left-wing racial rhetoric, by definition, disunites and divides the nation. It's whites versus blacks. It's Latinos versus blacks. It's men versus women. It's rural versus urban. Trump's rhetoric is all about uniting the nation. We are one. We are Americans. The Democrats and their versions of discrimination and disenfranchisement is all about dividing us by definition. Trump is all about uniting us. The very fact that the legacy media can only interpret his words. I mean, I don't know. Well, we're going to find out what they had to say yesterday. They were gobsmacked, all right, to use language from across the pond where I got my doctorate from, Durham University at the UK. They were absolutely gobsmacked. They didn't know what on earth to say about yesterday. I'm going to show you a clip from CNN. They were dumbfounded. What could they say? Are they all racists out there in the South Bronx attending the Trump rally? Are they all racist now? Right? They tried to do that with Larry Elder. Remember that when he was running for governor during the recall? Larry Elder, the blackface of white supremacists. You see, the very fact that they have no other frame of reference to interpret America First talk shows how left-wing the media is. They can only think in leftist racial terms. Trump is all about uniting the country around civic nationalism, whereas the Democrats are all about dividing us. And again, we could see the success of this redefinition of race as a civic identity in real time. One of the more poignant moments in the speech, this is one of my favorites, is when a lifelong Democrat, a Black Latino pastor, got up on stage and said this.
And I want to close by saying, Mr. President, I want to join you in having the Bronx great again. Please accept this Democrat, this Black Puerto Rican with a kinky hair and a broken English. Please accept my endorsement for you as a president. Thank you very much.
Now, gang,
make no mistake. The Democrats and the legacy media are absolutely panicked over this.